This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is off this week. 10 days ago, as if we could forget, on the morning of Friday, April 19th, Governor Deval Patrick issued these remarkable instructions to the public.
We're asking people to shelter in place, in other words, to stay indoors with their doors locked and not to open the door for anyone other than a properly identified law enforcement officer, and that applies here in Watertown, where we are right now, also Cambridge, Waltham, Newton, Belmont, and at this point, all of Boston. All of Boston.
Well, that shelter-in-place request remained in effect for hours as police searched for suspected Boston bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. He was apprehended after the request was lifted. But during those hours, Greater Boston was effectively in lockdown. There's great debate over the efficacy and legality now of what happened. Last Friday, reporters pressed Governor Patrick about whether or not he thinks officials took things too far by issuing the shelter-in-place request for almost 1 million people.
No, I think we did what we should have done and were supposed to do with the always imperfect information that you have at the time. And, you know, there's a difference between vigilance and fear. And I think it is important for us to be vigilant, even more so after the tragic reminders of more than a week ago, but not afraid.
That's Governor Deval Patrick speaking last Friday. But on one point, there does seem to be some consensus among legal and security experts. The scope of the police response was unprecedented. So what does that mean for the future of law enforcement and how it may respond to the next high-profile manhunt? Well, joining us now to help answer some of those questions is Harvey Silverglate. He's an attorney and civil liberties litigator. Harvey Silverglate, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be back.
Also with us from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, Christine Cole is with us. She's the executive director of the Criminal Justice Policy and Management Program there. Christine Cole, welcome to you.
Thank you. I also think it's great to be here. This is an interesting conversation.
Well, it's great to have you. So, listeners, what did you make of that shelter-in-place request that was issued for almost 1 million people in the greater Boston area? Do you think it was appropriate? Do you think it was an overreaction? What kind of precedent do you think it sets for future such manhunts, if and when we have them? Give us a call with your thoughts at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Now, Harvey Silverglate, let me start with you because we've already got some feedback on our Facebook page from people everyone who's listening experienced this. Susanna Michael wrote, "It was necessary in order to protect the citizens and get the terrorists, which they did." Whereas Barbara Diamond, another Radio Boston listener, responded and says, "It cost Metro Boston $300 to $400 million in business sales alone." She then goes on to quote Mao and says, "Political power flows out of the barrel of a gun." So two opposite perspectives there on that shelter-in-place request. What's your take, Harvey?
Well, I think it's not so much a question of how much money it costs, because you really can't measure security in terms of money. What I think the problem is how much liberty was lost. I think it was an extraordinary overreaction. And I've lived through quite a few public emergencies. I'm 70 years old, so I was born during World War II. I've never seen anything like this, and I can't believe that two people who were aloft somewhere in Watertown with a real cause of this.
Well, Harvey, let me jump here for a second, I may ask, because it was a shelter-in-place request, not an order. I mean, I actually went out and about on the streets of Boston around our studios, and I saw people out. The police weren't saying they were going to arrest folks for not sheltering in place. So how do you make the argument that it was a constriction on civil liberties?
Well, there were very few people that I've spoken to quite a few to see what people's assumptions were. Very few people really thought that it was a request rather than a command. And in any event, I do know a few people told me that they were hassled and told to go back home. I went out. I was not hassled. But I went to Harvard Square, where there were quite a few students hovering around outside. But it was didn't have the look and feel of a voluntary undertaking. And I know that The ACLU chapter here in Massachusetts, for example, is talking to people to see if anybody was hassled for going outside. Hmm.
Christine Cole, do you share Harvey Silverglate's concern about the precedent that this sets?
I don't, actually. I'm from a different perspective, perhaps. I've worked with law enforcement, never as a sworn or uniformed person. I did not go out. I understood that it was a request. I should add, I actually live a couple of blocks from the scenes in Watertown, so probably would have been dangerous for me to go out. But my perception is that it was, in fact, a request, that people paid attention to it and felt that by staying home, certainly not to a person, because Harvey has some other examples, but to a person, this was our community's way of helping. I think people were responsive, and I did not sense that there was an overreaction. Harvey said that he's never seen anything like this. Well, neither have I, and maybe that's why we've never seen this kind of response, because thankfully we've never had this kind of activity
neighborhood. Let me ask you about that, because usually the shelter-in-place request is put into effect for, say, pandemics or illnesses or major chemical spills in order to protect people from the spread of whatever pathogen or chemical might have been released into the environment. We've seen it more recently used very, very locally, say, in the cases of school shootings where students are told to shelter in place until law enforcement has secured the area. The difference is this time around we had, 87 square miles and approximately a million people being, told to honor this request. Do you think that the precedent has been set such that in future cases we might see widespread shelter-in-place requests put into other communities when something, perish the thought, but something similar happens?
I think that it was in response to what was presenting, right? We had a pretty serious threat presenting. When you go back to Monday and you look at what happened, we had a police officer killed on Thursday night into Friday morning. So at that point, I'm embarrassed to say I've lost track of the number dead at that point, with weapons of warfare and destruction. Just as you talked about the school shootings, people are asked to shelter in place for safety and for their own safety and to enhance the police and first responders' ability to restore order and keep safety.
Mm. Harvey Silverglate, tell me in more detail, given what Christine Cole said, why you think that the response was, in your mind, disproportionate to the threat that was perceived on Thursday night and Friday.
First of all, it was not a coincidence. It was not an accident that, in fact, suspect number two was apprehended after the shelter in place was abandoned and citizens were able to get outside and actually help in the public safety undertaking. A member of a household who had been cowering inside the house due to the shelter in place order went out to the backyard and saw the blood spots. That is not an accident. Citizens are essential for keeping eyes and ears open, to have put all the citizenry inside their houses with the shades drawn, was counterproductive as well as being dubious from a civil liberties point of view.
Hmm. Listeners, we're talking about that shelter-in-place request that was issued on the Friday during the peak of the manhunt for suspected Boston bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. It most certainly or probably affected you if you're listening to this broadcast, so we're wondering what you think. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm speaking with Harvey Silverglate. He's an attorney based in Cambridge, an expert on civil liberties law, and also with Christine Cole. She's the executive director of the program in criminal justice policy and management at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Harvey and Christine, if you'll stand by for just a moment, there's a lot of people who want to have their say about what they lived through. So I'm going to turn to our listeners briefly. Nick is calling from Acton. You're on the air, Nick.
Well, thanks very much for taking my call. So there's shades of George Orwell at play here. I find this the most remarkable and revealing of incidents. Part of the rationale for the lockdown was that it would enable Boston and the surrounding towns to send their troops off to Watertown to aid in the hunt, without having to worry about responding to incidents in their hometowns. It seems to me that the logical conclusion of that thinking is that if we have a lockdown once a week, the police can get on and perhaps address some of the backlog of unsolved crimes. If we have a permanent lockdown, then I guess we're seeing the end of all crime.
So Nick, let me just get some clarification for you. Is that something that you're being tongue-in-cheek about or you're advocating?
Oh, it's the most appalling move I think I've ever seen. So this is beyond a civil liberties issue, I think. It had clearly almost nothing to do with public safety and everything to do with a panicking response and an exercise of authorities that I suspect most people didn't realize were in place.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. Let's turn to Bedford, where Deb is calling. You're on the air, Deb.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to put forth my view, being a public health practitioner for 30 years, that actions to protect the public health and well-being can be taken in the fashion in which they were. And it was a request. I had to go to a funeral in Boston, and I heard the shelter-in-place command, and it was out there as knowledge you should have to figure out how you're going to spend your day. I called my local police department, as I've done in the winter, when we had many times where we were told in this winter where we had 100 inches of snow to act in your own self-interest to protect your well-being by modifying your behavior for the good of yourself and the good of others. Mm. So I do not see that it was a demand. It was a request. I went Route 128 to the Mass Pike into Dorchester. And anyone who thought that this was overreaching, we're in a new reality. My mother grew up in the Depression. Had to live through all kinds of things. I'm trying to take it as one step at a time. I could go where I needed to go with one phone call.
Deb, I'm going to take it from you there because you've got made a bunch of good points, which I'd like to turn to our guests. Thank you so much for calling. Christine, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Harvey Silverglate, let me ask you about what Deb said. She said this is the new reality.
Number one, a reality is what a society creates, not what is foisted on them. I agree this is the new reality, but it's a reality that we still have the freedom to fight if only we're aware of what's really going on. I notice that Deb, at one point in what she said, referred to this as a shelter-in-place command, even as she was saying, well, it was voluntary. Well, of course, at some level of our brains, it was a command.
Mm. Christine Cole, your response to that?
I think the beauty is that we can talk about this and that we have different perspectives on it. And I think that's a remarkable thing, and I applaud you for taking up the conversation. Is it a new reality? Maybe so, but it's predicated by, again, what's presenting. We had a bomber on the loose. We had somebody who had killed multiple people at this point. I did feel like it was a request, but I won't say that again. We've had other examples of this, right? When Sandy devastated the New Jersey and New York coasts back last fall, people were forcibly evacuated. People have been refused to return to some of those places for safety, for life and safety issues, for their safety and for the safety of others, including responders. Mm. 11 years ago, we had the Washington, D.C. sniper attacks. That was a roving crime scene. It was people who were on the loose. People had not been identified. And while there wasn't a shelter-in-place request made, there were very clear things that law enforcement suggested that people refrain from doing.
What do you think is the key difference, though? I mean, that the D.C. sniper case, I think, is a very interesting comparison to make because, as you said, these were two people on the loose who were intent and had demonstrated that they were killing people, and yet the choice was not made to have people shelter in place. Washington, D.C. as a whole essentially continued to function as normally as it could during that time while law enforcement executed a very detailed and extensive manhunt.
Well, I think it presented differently from the outset, right? It started as a shooting as opposed to a bombing at an outdoor event with multiple casualties, fatal and severe injuries. That's one thing that's very different about the two attacks. The other difference is in Watertown last week, we had a clear sense of where the suspect was in general terms. And a point that Harvey made, with which I have to agree, is there's a certain irony that the citizen response is what – the citizen awareness of his own backyard is what made a difference.
Harvey,
I should point out the D.C. sniper case, it was also the citizens who helped solve that one.
Of course.
Citizens are essential. We are not an occupied nation.
Well, let me ask you about what Boston, following from the D.C. case, and now we have Boston. Are you concerned that this is setting a precedent? Because lots of people, including Christine Cole, are saying that the situation in Boston was so unique that we're perhaps not likely to see something like this happen again.
Well, I don't think
hopefully
it's so unique. We've had such situations in the past, and the D.C. sniper case is a very good example. What is happening is that we are developing a new response to a situation that isn't common but also is not unprecedented.
Hmm. Harvey, go ahead.
It's the new response that really has me nervous. It's a highly militarized kind of response where the professionals are taking over, and that is not good for a lot of reasons.
Mm. Christine Cole, so let me expand on Harvey's point and turn a question to you, because there's the issue of the effect that the shelter-in-place order had on law enforcement's ability to do their manhunt and investigation on that Friday, but then the overall effect as well. Because, for example, Stephen Flynn, who directs Northeastern University's Costas Research Center for Homeland Security, has been quoted as saying, on the one hand, you're trying to obviously safeguard life and property. On the other hand, you want to make sure that you're not creating essentially future motivation for follow-on attacks to take place because of the possibility that if you carry out one of these horrific acts, you can shut down a major city. Your thoughts on that?
I want to go back to what Harvey was saying before I get to you, Meghna.
Sure.
I don't think we have a pattern of a new response, as Harvey's suggesting. I think what we have is a very different set of circumstances that presented here in the Boston area last week. And we have a single response, which was shelter in place in response to this incident. I do not see a pattern operating across the country with this kind of response. Number one. Number two, there was a militaristic response, and which I would argue is an appropriate response to the warfare that was presented to law enforcement. These guys were throwing bombs in a residential neighborhood in the middle of the night at police officers. It's not a surprise to me that they're going to be wearing Kevlar helmets and gear that is going to protect them and that they're going to evacuate homes. I don't see that as extraordinary. I see it as prudent and reflective of the threat that's presenting. And finally, the thing about militaristic. I said earlier that I live in the neighborhood where this happened. There were people in military-like garb, absolutely. And what I found remarkable is they were behaving as community police officers. They were engaging. They were calming. They were thoughtful. They were considerate. In people trying to get their dogs out to relieve themselves, they were operating as community police officers because that's the way they're trained. They were not there as the military.
You make some interesting points. We've just got a couple minutes to go. I'd like Harvey Silverglate to respond to that. I mean, essentially, Harvey, it seems that we are in a new era where that line between what is militaristic and what is law enforcement is becoming increasingly blurred.
Well, it is very important for our society to restore the line between the military and civilian police, because we have one of the oldest statutes on the books is the Posse Comitatus statute, which Congress has decreed that the military is not to serve as law enforcement because of the danger that poses to civilian control of the nation. The problem we have now is that law enforcement is being turned into a military, which is a kind of end run around the Posse Comitatus statute. And second of all, I want to point out that the shelter in place was not the only military-like operation. There were also police entries into houses not invited by the occupants. And we, of course, have a Fourth Amendment that provides that one's home is one's castle. These castles were breached.
Well, in the last couple seconds that we have, Christine Cole, I just want to come back to this question about whether or not the overall effect of essentially shutting down Greater Boston may, in the long run, work against anti-terrorism or anti-radicalization efforts across the United States.
I suppose that, as with many of the other topics we've discussed today, that's up for debate, and there are many sides to that. I think that this had a positive effect on law enforcement's ability to do their job, to minimize other loss of life of both law enforcement as well as other first responders and the citizens. I feel as if the citizens participated willingly in the shelter in place, and those who didn't, like Harvey, and was out in the neighborhood talking with people. I don't have data about people who were hassled. He presumably does. I suspect that if people fit the description of the suspect, that yes, of course they were spoken to. Others may have been invited to get out of a public space. That happens with some frequency. Mm. It happens when there's a bombing in the London Underground. We are told in the United States to be careful about being in large groups.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid we've run out of time for this important conversation, which thankfully in our community will continue to go on. Christine Cole is the Executive Director of the Program in Criminal Justice Policy and Management at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Harvey Silverglate, attorney and civil liberties law expert, joining us from Cambridge. Harvey Silverglate, always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and it's nice to have a free press.
And listeners, I'll end with this note from listener Melinda Fayette, who posted on our Facebook page, "Much was learned from Columbine, much was learned from Waco and September 11th. Much will be learned here, too, but that's the point. Do the best you can with the training and information you have, then learn from it and move on." Let us know what you think on our Facebook page. We're facebook.com/Radio Boston. There's more of the show in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.